But the more I paced, the more annoyed I became. I needed a car for tomorrow, and I wasn't going to take another car from Ranger. I didn't like being entertainment. Not automotive entertainment, not sexual entertainment. Aha, a voice inside me said. Now we're getting somewhere. This pacing you're doing isn't about the car. This is about the sex. You're all bummed out because you got boinked by a man who wanted nothing more than physical sex. Do you know what you are? The voice asked. You're a hypocrite. So, I said to the voice, and what's your point? I thrashed through my cupboards and refrigerator looking for a tasty cake. I knew there were none left, but I looked anyway. Another exercise in futility. My specialty. Okay, fine. I'll go out and buy some. I grabbed the keypad Ranger left for me, and I stomped out of the apartment. I slammed the door shut, punched in the code, and realized I was standing out there with nothing but a keypad. No car keys. Unnecessary, of course, because I didn't have a car. Also, I was without money and credit cards. Large sigh. I needed to go back inside and rethink this. I punched in the code and tried the door. The door wouldn't open. I put the code in again. Nothing. I didn't have a key. All I had was a damn stupid keypad. No reason to panic. I had to be doing something wrong. I went through it again. It wasn't that complicated. Punch in the numbers, and the door unlocks. Maybe I was remembering the numbers wrong. I tried a couple other combinations. No luck. Piece of shit technology. I hate technology. Technology sucks. Okay, take it easy, I told myself. You don't want a repeat performance of the car window shootout. You don't want to go gonzo over a silly keypad. I took a couple deep breaths, and I fed the numbers into the keypad one more time. I grabbed the doorknob and pulled and twisted, but the door wouldn't open. God damn! I threw the keypad down on the floor and jumped up and down. Damn, damn, damn! I kicked the keypad all the way to the far end of the hall. I ran down the hall, unholstered my gun, and shot the keypad. Bam! The keypad jumped, and I shot it again. An Asian woman opened the door across the hall. She looked out at me, gave a gasp, pulled back inside, and closed and locked her door. Sorry, I called out to her through the door. I got carried away. I retrieved the mangled keypad and skulked back to my half of the hall. My next-door neighbor, Mrs. Carwatt, was in her doorway.
Are you having a problem, dear? She asked.
I'm locked out of my apartment. Fortunately, Mrs. Carwatt kept a key. Mrs. Carwatt gave me the spare key. I inserted it in the lock, and the door wouldn't open. I followed Mrs. Carwatt into her house, and I used her phone to call Ranger. The frigging door won't open, I said.
I'll send Hector.
No, I can't understand Hector. I can't talk to him. And he scares the bejesus out of me. 20 minutes later, I was sitting in the hall with my back to the wall, and Ranger and Hector showed up.
What's wrong? Ranger asked.
The door won't open.
Probably just a programming glitch. Do you have the keypad?
I dropped the keypad into his hand. Ranger and Hector looked down at the keypad. They looked up at each other, exchanged raised eyebrows, and smiled.
I think I see the problem, Ranger said. Someone shot the shit out of this keypad.
He turned it over in his hand.
At least you were able to hit it. Nice to know the target practice paid off.
I'm good at close range. It took Hector 20 seconds to open my door and 10 minutes to remove the sensors.
Let me know if you want the system put back in, Ranger said.
I appreciate the thought, but I'd rather walk blindfolded into an apartment filled with alligators.
Do you want to try your luck with another car? We could raise the stakes. I could give you a Porsche.
Tempting, but no. I'm expecting an insurance check tomorrow. As soon as I get it, I'll have Lula drive me to a dealer. Ranger and Hector took off, and I locked myself into my apartment. I'd worked out a lot of aggression shooting the keypad, and I felt much more mellow now. My heart was only skipping a beat once in a while, and the eye twitch was hardly noticeable. I ate the last lump of frozen cookie dough. It wasn't a tasty cake, but it was pretty good all the same. I zapped the television on and found a hockey game.
"Uh-oh," Lula said the next morning. "Was that a taxi that brought you to the office? What happened to Ranger's car?"
"It burned up."
"Say what?"
"And my bag was in it. I need to go shopping for a new handbag."
"I'm the woman for the job," Lula said. "What time is it? Are the stores open yet?"
It was 10 o'clock Monday morning. The stores were open. I'd reported my melted credit cards. I was ready to roll.
"Hold on," Connie said. "What about the filing?"
"The filing's just about all done," Lula said.
She took a stack of files and shoved them into a drawer.
"Anyway, we aren't going to be long. Stephanie always gets the same boring bag. She goes straight to the coach counter and gets one of them big-ass black leather shoulder bags, and that's the end of that."
"Turns out that my driver's license burned up, too," I said. "I was hoping you might also give me a ride to the DMV. Connie did a big eye roll.
"Go!"
It was noon when we got to Quaker Bridge Mall. I bought my shoulder bag, and then Lula and I tested out some perfume. We were on the upper level, walking toward the escalators on our way to leave for the lot, and a familiar shape loomed in front of me.
"You," Martin Paulson said. "What is it with you? I can't get away from you."
"Don't start with me," I said. "I'm not happy with you."
"Gee, that's too bad. I almost really care. What are you doing here today? Looking for somebody new to brutalize?"
"I didn't brutalize you."
"You knocked me down."
"You fell down. Twice."
"I told you I have a bad sense of balance."
"Look, just get out of my way. I'm not going to stand here and argue with you."
"Yeah, you heard her," Lula said. "Get out of her way."
Paulson turned to better see Lula, and apparently he was caught off guard by what he saw, because he lost his balance and fell backward down the escalator. There were a couple people in front of him, and he knocked them over like bowling pins. They all landed in a heap on the floor. Lula and I scrambled down the escalator to the pile of bodies. Paulson seemed to be the only one who was hurt.
"My leg's broken," he said. "I bet you anything my leg's broken. I keep telling you, I have a problem with equilibrium. Nobody ever listens to me."
"There's probably a good reason why no one listens to you," Lula said. "You look like a big bag of wind if you ask me."
"It's all your fault," Paulson said. "You scared the hell out of me. They should get the fashion police out after you. And what's with the yellow hair? You look like Harpo Marx."
"Huh," Lula said. "I'm out of here. I'm not standing here getting insulted. I got to get back to work anyway."
We were in the car at the exit to the parking lot, and Lula stopped short.
"Hold on. Do I have my shopping bags in the back seat?"
I turned and looked. "No."
"Damn, I must have dropped them when that sack of monkey duty pushed me."
"No problem. Pull up to the door and I'll run in and get them." Lula drove to the entrance and I retraced our steps back to the middle of the mall. I had to walk past Paulson to get to the escalator. The EMTs had him on a stretcher and were getting ready to wheel him out. I took the escalator to the second level and found the shopping bags laying on the floor by the bench, right where Lula had left them. 30 minutes later, we were back at the office, and Lula had her bag spread out on the couch.
"Uh-oh," she said. "We got one too many bags. You see this here big brown bag? It's not mine."
"It was on the floor with the other bags," I said.
"Oh, boy," Lula said. "Are you thinking what I'm thinking? I don't even want to look in that bag. I got a bad feeling about that bag."
"You are right about the bad feeling," I said, looking into the bag. "There are a pair of pants in here that could only belong to Paulson, plus a couple shirts. Oh, crap, there's a box all wrapped up in Happy Birthday Kids wrapping paper."
"My suggestion is you throw that bag in the dumpster and you go wash your hands," Lula said.
"I can't do that. The guy just broke his leg, and there's a kid's birthday present in here."
"No big deal," Lula said. "He can go on the internet and steal some more stuff and get another present."
"This is my fault," I said. I took Paulson's bag. I need to get it back to him. There are several hospitals in the Trenton area. If Paulson was taken to St. Francis, I could walk up the street and give him his bag before he was discharged. And there was a good chance Paulson was at St. Francis because it was the closest hospital to his home. I called the switchboard and had them check with ER. I was told Paulson was indeed in ER, and they expected him to be there a while longer. I wasn't looking forward to seeing Paulson, but it was a nice spring day, and it felt good to be outside. I decided I'd walk to the hospital, and then I'd walk to my parents and mooch dinner and say hello to Rex. I had my new bag over my shoulder, and I was feeling confident because my gun was in my bag, plus new lip gloss. Am I a professional or what? I swung along Hamilton for a couple blocks, and then cut off just before the hospital's main entrance, and took the side street to the emergency entrance. I found the nurse in charge, and asked her to give the bag to Paulson. So now I was off the hook. The bag was no longer my responsibility. I'd gone the extra mile to get it back to Paulson, and I left the hospital feeling all elated with my own goodness. My parents lived behind the hospital, in the heart of the burg. I walked past the parking garage and paused at the intersection. It was mid-afternoon, and there were few cars on the roads. Schools were still in session. Restaurants were empty. A lone car rolled down the street and paused at the stop sign. A car was parked at the curb to my left. I heard a foot scrape against gravel. I turned my head at the sound. And the rabbit popped up from behind the parked car. He was fully suited this time.
"Boo!"
he said. I gave an involuntary shriek. He'd caught me by surprise. I shoved my hand into my bag in search of my gun, but a second person was suddenly in front of me, grabbing at my shoulder strap. It was the guy in the Clinton mask. If I could have gotten to my gun, I would gladly have shot them. And if it had been a single man, I might have been able to get to my gun. As it was, I was overpowered. I went down kicking and screaming and clawing with both men on top of me. The streets were deserted, but I was making a lot of noise, and there were houses nearby. If I yelled loud enough and long enough, I knew I'd be heard. The car in the intersection wheeled around and rolled to a stop inches away from us. The rabbit opened the back door and tried to drag me into the car. I was spread eagle in the car door opening, hanging on with my fingernails, screaming my head off. The Clinton mask guy tried to grab my legs, and when he came in close, I kicked out and caught him under the chin with my cat. The guy staggered backward and keeled over, crash, flat on his back on the sidewalk. The driver was out of the car now. He was wearing a Richard Nixon mask, and I was pretty sure I recognized the build. I was pretty sure it was Darrow. I wriggled away from the rabbit. Hard to hold on to things when you're wearing a rabbit suit with rabbit paws. I tripped on the curb and went down on one knee. I scrambled up and took off, running for all I was worth. The rabbit ran after me. There was a car in the intersection, and I streaked past it, yelling. My voice felt hoarse, and I was probably croaking more than yelling. The knee was torn out of my jeans. My arm was scratched and bleeding, and my hair was in my face, wild and tangled from rolling on the ground with the rabbit. I barely glanced at the car, noting only that it was silver. I could hear the rabbit behind me. My lungs were burning, and I knew I couldn't outrun him. I was too scared to think ahead. I was blindly running down the street. I heard the screech of wheels and a car motor getting gunned. Darrow, I thought, coming to get me. I turned to look, and I saw it wasn't Darrow behind me. It was the silver car that had been in the intersection. It was a Buick LeSabre, and my mother was at the wheel. She ran flat out into the rabbit. The rabbit did a flip off the car in an explosion of fake fur and landed in a crumpled heap at the side of the road. The Darrow-driven car slid to a stop beside the rabbit. Darrow and the other rubber mask guy got out, scooped the rabbit up, dumped him into the back seat, and took off. My mother was stopped a few feet from me. I limped to the car, she popped the lock, and I got in.
"Holy Mary, Mother of God," my mother said. "You were being chased by Richard Nixon, Bill Clinton, and a rabbit."
"Yeah," I said,
Good thing you came along when you did. I ran over the rabbit, she wailed. I probably killed him.
He was a bad rabbit. He deserved to die.
He looked like the Easter Bunny. I killed the Easter Bunny, she sobbed.
I pulled a tissue out of my mother's purse and handed it to her. Then I looked through the purse more thoroughly. You have any Valium in here? Any Klonopin or Ativan? My mother blew her nose and put the car in gear.
Do you have any idea what it's like for a mother to drive down the street and see her daughter being chased by a rabbit? I don't know why you can't have a normal job, like your sister.
I rolled my eyes. My sister again, Saint Valerie.
And she's dating a nice man, my mother said. I think he has honorable intentions, and he's a lawyer. He'll make a good living someday.
My mother drove back to the intersection so I could retrieve my shoulder bag.
And what about you? She wanted to know. Who are you dating?
Don't ask, I said. I wasn't dating anyone. I was fornicating with Batman.
I'm not sure what I should do next, my mother said. Do you think I should report this to the police? What would I say to them? I mean, how would it sound? I was on my way to Giovacchini's for lunch meet when I saw a rabbit chasing my daughter down the street, so I ran over him, but now he's gone.
Remember when I was a kid and we were all going to the movies and Daddy hit the dog on Roebling? We got out and looked for the dog, but we couldn't find him. He just ran off somewhere.
I felt terrible about that.
Yeah, but we went to the movies anyway. Maybe we should just go get the lunch meat.
It was a rabbit, my mother said, and he had no business being in the road.
Exactly. We drove to Giovacchini's in silence and parked in front of the store. We both got out and looked at the front of the Buick. There was some rabbit fur stuck to the grill, but aside from that, the LeSabre looked okay. While my mother was talking to the butcher, I stole off and called Morelli on the outside payphone. This is a little awkward, I said, but my mother just ran over the rabbit.
Ran over?
As in roadkill. We're not sure what to do about it.
Where are you?
Giovacchini's buying lunch meat.
And the rabbit?
Gone. He was with two other guys. They scooped him up off the road and drove away with him. There was a long silence on the phone.
I'm fucking speechless, Morelli finally said.
An hour later, I heard Morelli's truck pull up in front of my parents' house. He was in jeans and boots and a cotton crew with the sleeves pushed up. The crew was loose enough to hide the gun that was always at his waist. I'd showered and fixed my hair, but I didn't have fresh clothes to change into, so I was still in the torn, blood-stained jeans and dirt-smudged T-shirt. I had a ragged cut on my knee, a large scrape on my arm, and another on my cheek. I met Morelli on the porch and closed the door behind me. I didn't want Grandma Mazur joining us. Morelli gave me the long, slow look-over.
I could kiss that cut on your knee and make it all better.
A skill acquired from years of playing doctor. We sat side by side on the step, and I told him about the rabbit at the bakery and the attempted abduction at the intersection. And I'm almost sure Darrow was driving, I said.
Do you want me to have him brought in?
No, I couldn't positively ID him. Morelli's face broke into a smile.
Your mother really ran the rabbit over?
She saw him chasing me, and she ran him over, threw him about 10 feet into the air.
She likes you.
I nodded yes, and my eyes filled. A car drove by. Two men. That could be them, I said. Two of Abruzzi's guys. I try to be vigilant, but the cars are always different, and I only know Abruzzi and Darrow. The others have always had their faces covered. I have no good way of knowing when I'm being stalked, and it's worse at night when all I can see are lights coming and going.
We're working overtime trying to find Evelyn, canvassing the neighborhoods for witnesses, but so far there hasn't been a break. Abruzzi's got himself well protected.
Do you need to talk to my mom about the rabbit thing?
Were there any witnesses? Only the two guys in the car. We don't usually write up accidents involving rabbits. This was a rabbit, right?
Morelli declined dinner. I couldn't blame him. Valerie had Clown home with her, and the table was standing room only.
"Isn't he the cute one?"
Grandma whispered to me in the kitchen.
"Just like the Pillsbury Doughboy."
After dinner, I got my dad to drive me home.
"What do you think of this clown?" he asked on the way. "He seems to be sweet on Valerie. Do you think there's any chance this could turn into something?"
He didn't get up and leave when Grandma asked him if he was a virgin. I thought that was a good sign.
Yeah, he hung in there. He must really be desperate if he's willing to get involved with this family. Has anyone told him the horse kid belongs to Valerie?
I figured there wasn't a problem with Mary Alice. Clown probably had empathy for a kid who was different. What Clown might not understand was Valerie and the fluffy pink slippers. Probably we should make sure he never sees the slippers. It was almost 9 when my dad dropped me off. The parking lot was filled, and lights were on in all the apartment windows. The seniors were settled in for the night, victims of failing night vision and television addiction. By 9 o'clock, they were happy campers, having self-medicated with tumblers of booze and diagnosis murder. At 10 o'clock, they'd pop a little white pill and hurl themselves into hours of sleep apnea. I approached my front door and decided I'd been hasty in rejecting Ranger's security system. It would be nice to know if someone was waiting for me inside. I had my gun shoved into the waistband of my jeans, and I had a plan outlined in my head. My plan was to open the door, take the gun in hand, flip all the lights on, and do another embarrassing imitation of a television cop. The kitchen was easy to cover. Nothing there. The living room and dining room were next. Again, easy to take in. The bathroom was more tense. I had the shower curtain to contend with. I needed to remember not to close the shower curtain. I ripped the shower curtain open and let out a whoosh of air. No one dead in my tub. At first glance, my bedroom was fine. Unfortunately, I knew from past experience that the bedroom was filled with hiding places for all sorts of nasty things, like snakes. I looked under the bed and in all my drawers. I opened my closet door and let out another whoosh of air. Nobody here. I'd gone through the entire apartment and not found anyone, dead or alive. I could lock myself in and feel perfectly safe. I was leaving the bedroom when it hit me. A visual memory of something odd, something out of place. I returned to my closet and opened the door. And there it was, hanging with the rest of my clothes, smashed between my suede jacket and a denim shirt. The rabbit suit. I snapped on rubber gloves, removed the rabbit suit from my closet, and deposited it in the elevator. I didn't want another full-scale crime scene investigation assault on my apartment. I used the payphone in the lobby to put in an anonymous call to the police about the suit in the elevator. And then I returned to my apartment and slid Ghostbusters into the DVD player. Halfway through Ghostbusters, I got a call from Morelli.
"You wouldn't happen to know anything about the rabbit suit in your elevator, would you?"
"Who, me?"
"Off the record, out of morbid curiosity. Where did you find it?"
"It was hanging in my closet."
"Christ."
"Do you suppose this means the rabbit no longer needs the suit?" I asked. I dialed Ranger first thing the next morning. "About that security system," I said.
"Are you still having visitors?"
"I found a rabbit suit in my closet last night."
"Anybody in it?"
"Nope, just the suit."
"I'll send Hector."
"Hector scares the hell out of me."
"Yeah, Me too, Ranger said. But he hasn't killed anybody in over a year now. And he's gay. You're probably safe.
Chapter 15. The next call was for Morelli.
I just got into work and I heard an interesting piece of information, Morelli said to me. Do you know Leo Klug?
No.
He's a butcher at Sal Carto's meat market. Your mother probably gets her kielbasa there. Leo is about my height, but heavier. He has a scar running the length of his face. Black hair.
Okay, I know who you mean. I was in there a couple weeks ago picking up some sausage, and he waited on me.
It's pretty well known here that Klug has done some contract butchering.
You're not talking about cows.
Cows are the day job, Morelli said.
I have a feeling I'm not going to like the direction of this conversation.
Lately, Klug has been hanging out with a couple guys who work for Abruzzi. And this morning, Klug turned up dead, the victim of a hit and run.
Oh, my God.
He was found on the side of the road half a block from the butcher shop.
Any idea who hit him?
No, but statistics are high for a drunk driver.
We pondered that for a moment.
Probably your mother should run the LeSabre through a car wash, Morelli said.
Holy crap! My mother killed Leo Klug!
I didn't hear that, Morelli said.
I got off the phone and made some coffee. I scrambled an egg and popped a piece of bread into the toaster. Stephanie Plum, domestic goddess. I sneaked out into the hall, swiped Mr. Waleski's paper, and read it with my breakfast. I was returning the paper when Ranger and Hector stepped out of the elevator.
I know where she is, Ranger said. I just got a call. Let's roll.
I cut my eyes to Hector.
Don't worry about Hector, Ranger said.
I grabbed my bag and a jacket and ran to keep up with Ranger. He was driving the bug-eyed truck again. I hauled myself up to seat level and buckled in. Where is she?
Newark Airport. Jean Ellen was returning with her FDA, and she saw Dottie and Evelyn and the kids in the waiting area one gate over. I had Tank check on their flight. It was scheduled to take off at 10, but it's been delayed an hour. We should be able to get there in time.
Where were they going?
Miami.
Traffic was heavy through Trenton. It eased up for a while and then got heavy again on the turnpike. Fortunately, the flow on the turnpike was steady. Good Jersey traffic. The kind that gets your adrenaline going. Bumper to bumper at 80 miles an hour. I looked at my watch when we took the airport exit. It was almost 10 o'clock. A few minutes later, Ranger swung into the Delta passenger drop-off and stopped at the curb.
It's getting tight, he said. You go ahead while I park. If you have a gun on you, you have to leave it in the truck.
I gave him my gun and took off. I checked the departures monitor when I entered the terminal. The flight was now on time, still leaving from the same gate. I cracked my knuckles while I stood in line at the security check. I was so close to Evelyn and Annie. It would be a killer headache if I missed them here. I passed through security and followed the signs to the gate. I was moving down the corridor, and I was looking at everyone. I scanned ahead, and I saw Evelyn and Dottie and the kids two gates away. They were sitting, waiting. Nothing unusual about them. A couple moms and their kids, going to Florida. I quietly approached them and sat in the empty seat next to Evelyn. We need to talk, I said. They seemed only mildly surprised, as if nothing could surprise them much anymore. They both looked tired. Their clothes looked slept in. The kids were amusing each other, being loud and obnoxious. The sort of kids you see all the time in airports, strung out.
I meant to call you, Evelyn said. I would have called when we got to Miami. You should tell Grammy I'm okay.
I want to know why you're running. And if you don't tell me, I'm going to make problems for you. I'm going to stop you from leaving.
No, Evelyn said. Please don't do that. It's important that we catch this plane.
The first boarding announcement went out. The Trenton police are looking for you, I said. You're wanted for questioning for two murders. I can call security and have you brought back to Trenton. Evelyn's face went white.
He'll kill me.
Abruzzi? She nodded.
Maybe you should tell her, Dottie said. We haven't got much time.
When Stephen lost the bar to Abruzzi, Abruzzi came over to the house with his man and he did something to me.
I felt myself instinctively suck in some air.
I'm sorry, I said. It was his way of making us afraid. He's like a cat with a mouse. He likes to play before he kills, and he likes to dominate women.
You should have gone to the police.
He would have killed me before I got to testify. Or worse, he might have done something to Annie. The legal system moves too slow with a man like Abruzzi.
Why is he after you now?
Ranger had already told me the answer, but I wanted to hear it from Evelyn.
Abruzzi is a war nut. He plays war games, and he collects medals and things. And he had one medal that he kept on his desk. I guess it was his favorite medal because it belonged to Napoleon. Anyway, when Stephen and I got divorced, the court gave Stephen visitation rights. He got Annie every Saturday. A couple weeks ago, Abruzzi had a birthday party at his house for his daughter, and he demanded that Stephen bring Annie.
Was Annie friends with Abruzzi's daughter?
No. It was just Abruzzi's way of asserting his power. He's always doing things like that. He calls the people around him his troops, and they have to treat him like the Godfather or Napoleon or some big general. So he gave this party for his daughter, and the troops were all supposed to attend with their kids. Stephen was considered one of the troops. He lost the bar to Abruzzi, and it was like Abruzzi owned him after that. Stephen didn't like losing the bar, but I think he liked belonging to Abruzzi's family. Made him feel like a big shot to be associated with someone everyone was afraid of.
Until he got sawed in half.
Anyway, while the party was going on, Annie wandered into Abruzzi's office, spotted the medal on Abruzzi's desk, and took it back to the party to show the rest of the children. No one paid much attention, and somehow the medal got stuffed into Annie's pocket, and she brought it home.
There was a second boarding call, and from the corner of my eye I could see Ranger standing at a distance, watching. "Keep going," I said. "There's still time."
As soon as I saw the medal, I knew what it was.
"Your ticket out."
Yes. As long as I was in Trenton, Abruzzi would own Annie and me. And I had no money to leave, no job skills. And worse, there was a divorce agreement. But the medal was worth a lot of money. Abruzzi used to brag about it all the time. So I packed up and left. I was out of the house an hour after the medal walked in. I went to Dottie for help because I didn't know where else to go. Until I sold the medal, I didn't have any money.
"Unfortunately, it takes time to sell a medal like that,"
Dottie said,
"and it had to be done quietly."
A tear slid down Evelyn's cheek.
"I made a mess of it for Dottie. Now she's dragged into it and can't get out."
Dottie was keeping watch over the pack of kids.
"It'll work out okay," she said.
But she didn't look like she believed it.
"What about the pictures Annie drew in her pad?" I asked. "They were pictures of people getting shot. I thought maybe she witnessed a murder." "If you look more closely, you'll see the men are wearing medals. She drew the pictures while I was packing. Everyone who came into contact with Abruzzi, even children, knew about war and killing and medals. It was an obsession."
I suddenly felt very defeated. There was nothing here for me. No witness to a murder. No one who could help remove Abruzzi from my life.
"We have a buyer waiting for us in Miami,"
Dottie said.
"I sold my car to get these tickets."
"Can you trust this buyer?"
"He seems to be okay, and I have a friend meeting us at the airport. He's a pretty sharp guy, and he's going to oversee the transaction. I think the transaction is pretty simple. We hand over the medal, some expert examines it, and Evelyn gets a suitcase filled with money."
"Then what?"
"We'll probably have to stay hidden, start a new life somewhere. If Abruzzi gets caught or killed, we can come home."
I had no reason to detain them. I thought they'd made some bad choices, but who was I to judge?
"Good luck," I said. "Keep in touch. And call Mabel. She worries about you."
Evelyn jumped up and hugged me. Dottie gathered the kids together, and they all toddled off to Miami. Ranger came over and slung an arm around me.
"They told you a sob story, didn't they?"
"Yep."
He smiled and kissed me on the top of my head.
"You really should think about getting into a different line of work.
Grooming kitty cats, maybe. Or floral design.
It was very convincing.
Did the little girl witness a murder?
No, she stole a medal that was worth a suitcase full of money. Ranger raised his eyebrows and grinned.
Good for her. I like to see enterprise in kids.
I haven't got a murder witness, and the bear and the rabbit are dead. I think I'm fucked.
Maybe after lunch, he said. My treat.
You mean lunch is your treat?
That too. I know a place here in Newark that makes shorties look like a sissy joint. Oh boy. And by the way, I checked your .38 when you left it in the truck. You only have 2 bullets in it. I have this sinking feeling that the gun will go back to the cookie jar when you empty the cylinder.
I smiled at Ranger. I can be mysterious, too. Ranger paged Hector when we were on our way home, and Hector was in front of my apartment waiting for us when we stepped out of the elevator. He handed the new keypad to Ranger, and he smiled at me and made a gun with his fist and forefinger.
Bang!
He said. Pretty good, I said to Ranger. Hector's learning English. Ranger flipped me the keypad, and he left with Hector. I let myself into my apartment, and I stood in my kitchen. Now what? Now I had to hang out and wonder when Abruzzi would come for me. What form would it take, and how awful would it be? Awful beyond my imaginings, probably. If I was my mother, I'd be ironing. My mother ironed under stress. Stay far away from my mother when she is ironing. If I was Mabel, I'd be baking. What about Grandma Mazur? That was an easy one. The Weather Channel. So what do? I eat tasty cakes. Okay, there's my problem. I haven't got any tasty cakes. I'd had a burger with Ranger, but I'd skipped dessert. And now I needed a tasty cake. Without a tasty cake, I was left to sit here and worry about Abruzzi. Unfortunately, I had no way of taking myself out to Tasty Cake Land because I didn't have a car. I was still waiting for the stupid insurance check to arrive. Hey, hold the phone. I could walk to the convenience store. 4 blocks. Not the sort of thing a Jersey girl ordinarily did, but what the hell? I had my gun back in my bag with 2 bullets ready and waiting. That was a confidence builder. I would have shoved it under the waistband of my jeans like Ranger and Joe, but there wasn't room. Probably I should restrict myself to just 1 tasty cake. I locked up and took the stairs to the 1st floor. I didn't live in a fancy building. It was kept clean and it was adequately maintained. It had been built without frills, and for that matter without quality. Still, it was enduring. It had a back door and a front door, and both doors opened to a small foyer. The stairs and the elevator also opened to the foyer. Mailboxes banked one wall. The floor was tiled. Management had added a potted palm and 2 wingback chairs in an attempt to compensate for the lack of a swimming pool. Abruzzi was sitting in one of the wingback chairs. His suit was impeccable. His shirt was a brilliant white. His face was expressionless. He motioned to the wingback next to him.
"Sit down," he said. "I thought we should have a conversation."
Dara was motionless at the door. I sat in the chair, and I took the gun out of my bag, and I aimed it at Abruzzi. "What would you like to talk about?"
"Is that gun supposed to frighten me?"
"It's a precaution."
"Not good military strategy for a meeting of surrender."
"Which one of us is supposed to be surrendering?"
"You, of course," he said. "You're soon to be taken as a prisoner of war."
"Newsflash, you need serious psychiatric help."
"I've lost troops because of you."
"The rabbit?"
"He was a valued member of my command."
"The bear?" Abruzzi gave a distracted wave of his hand.
"The bear was hired help. He was sacrificed for your benefit and my protection. He had an unfortunate habit of gossiping to people outside my family."
"Okay. How about Soder?" Was he troops?
Soder failed me. Soder had no character. He was a coward. He couldn't control his own wife and daughter. He was a useless liability, just like his bar. The insurance on the bar was worth more than the bar itself.
I'm not sure what part I play in all this.
You're the enemy. You chose to be on Evelyn's side in this game. As I'm sure you know, Evelyn has something I want. I'll give you a last chance to survive. You can help me get back what's rightfully mine.
I don't know what you're talking about. Abruzzi looked down at my gun.
2 bullets?
That's all I need. Oh, man, I couldn't believe I just said that. I hoped Abruzzi left first, because I probably just wet the chair.
It's war, then?
Abruzzi asked.
You should reconsider. You won't like what's going to happen to you. No more fun and games.
I didn't say anything. Abruzzi stood and walked out the door. Darrow followed. I sat in the chair for a while with the gun in my hand, waiting for my heart rate to drop back to normal. I stood up and checked the chair seat. Then I checked my seat. Both dry. It was a miracle. Walking 4 blocks for a tasty cake had lost some of its appeal. Maybe it would be better to set my affairs in order. Aside from establishing a legal guardian for Rex, the only open end in my life was Andy Bender. I went upstairs to my apartment, and I called the office. "I'm going after Bender," I said to Lula. "Do you want to ride shotgun?"
"No way, Jose. You'd have to put me in a full contamination suit before I'd go anywhere near that place. Even then, I wouldn't go. I'm telling you, God's got something going on there. He's got plans."
I hung up with Lula, and I called Clown. "I'm going after Bender," I said to him. "Do you want to ride along?"
"Oh, darn, I can't. I'd like to. You know how much I'd like to do that, but I can't. I just got a big case. A car crash right in front of the laundromat. Well, okay, it wasn't exactly in front of the laundromat. I had to run a few blocks to get to it in time. But I think there's going to be some good injury."
Maybe this is for the best, I told myself. Maybe at this point in time I'm better off doing the job alone. Maybe I would have been better off alone always. Unfortunately, I still don't have handcuffs. And what's worse, I don't have a car. What I have is a gun with 2 bullets. So I chose the only alternative left to me. I called a cab. "Wait here for me," I told the driver. "I won't be long." He cut his eyes to me and then looked out at the projects.
"Good thing I know your father, or I wouldn't sit here idling my engine. This isn't exactly an upscale neighborhood."
I had my gun in the black nylon webbed holster strapped to my leg. I left my bag in the cab. I walked to the door and knocked. Bender's wife answered. "I'm looking for Andy," I told her.
"You're kidding, right?"
"I'm serious."
"He's dead. I thought you would have heard."
For a moment, my mind went blank. My second reaction was disbelief. She was lying. Then I looked beyond her and realized the apartment was clean, and there was no sign of Andy Bender.
"I didn't hear," I said. "What happened?"
"Remember how he had the flu?"
I nodded.
"Well, it killed him. Turned out he had one of those superbugs. After you left, he got a neighbor to take him to the hospital, but it went into his lungs, and that was that. It was an act of God."
All the hair stood up on my arms.
"I'm sorry."
"Yeah, right," she said, and she closed the door.
I walked back to the cab and slunk into the back seat.
"You're awful white," the driver said. "Are you okay?"
"Something bizarre just happened, but I'm fine. I'm getting used to bizarre things."
"Now what?"
"Take me to Vinny's." I burst into the bonds office. "You're not going to believe this," I said to Lula. "Andy Bender is dead."
"Get out. Are you shitting me?"
The door to Vinny's inner office whipped open.
Were there witnesses? Cripes, you didn't shoot him in the back, did you? My insurance company hates that.
I didn't shoot him at all. He died from the flu. I was just at his apartment. His wife told me he was dead. From the flu.
Lula did the sign of the cross. I'm glad I learned about this cross thing, she said.
Ranger was at Connie's desk. He had a file in his hand, and he was smiling.
Did you just get out of a cab?
Maybe. The smile widened.
You went after an FTA in a cab.
I rested my hand on my gun and blew out a sigh.
Don't give me a hard time. I'm not having a great day, and as you know, I've got 2 bullets left. I might end up using them on one of us.
Does you need a ride home?
Yes.
I'm your man, Ranger said.
Connie and Lula fanned themselves behind his back. I climbed into the truck and looked around. Ranger cut his eyes to me.
Are you looking for someone?
Abruzzi. He threatened me again.
Did you see him?
No.
It's not a long drive from the office to my apartment building. A couple miles. Progress is slowed by lights and occasionally traffic, depending on the time of day. I would have liked the drive to be longer today. I felt safe from Abruzzi when I was with Ranger. Ranger turned into my lot and parked.
There's a man in the SUV by the dumpster, Ranger said. Do you know him?
No, he doesn't live in the building.
Let's talk to him.
Ranger and I got out of the truck, walked to the SUV, and Ranger rapped on the driver's side window. The driver rolled the window down.
Yeah? Waiting for someone? What's it to you?
Ranger reached in, grabbed the guy by the front of his jacket, and pulled him halfway through the window.
I'd like you to take a message to Eddie Abruzzi, Ranger said. Can you do that for me?
The driver nodded. Ranger released the driver and stepped back.
Tell Abruzzi he's lost the war, and he should move on.
We both had guns drawn, and we kept them steady on the SUV until it was out of sight. Ranger looked up at my window.
We're going to stand here for a minute to give the rest of the team time to get out of your apartment. I don't want to have to shoot anybody. I'm on a tight schedule today. I don't want to get hung up filling out police forms.
We waited 5 minutes, and then went into the building and took the stairs. The second floor hall was empty. The keypad reported that security had been breached on my apartment. Ranger went in first and walked through. The apartment was empty. The phone rang just as Ranger was leaving. It was Eddie Abruzzi, and he wasted no time with me. He asked for Ranger. Ranger put him on the speakerphone.
Stay out of this, Abruzzi said. This is a private matter between the girl and me. Wrong. As of this moment, you're out of her life. So, you're choosing sides? Yeah, I'm choosing sides. You leave me no choice, then, Abruzzi said. I suggest you look out the window into the parking lot.
And he disconnected. Ranger and I walked to the window and looked out. The SUV was back. It pulled up to Ranger's truck with the bug-eyed lights. The guy in the passenger side lobbed a package into the truck bed, and the truck was instantly engulfed in flames. We stood there for a few minutes watching the spectacle, listening to the sirens get closer.
I liked that truck, Ranger said.
By the time Morelli arrived, it was after 6, and the remains of the truck were being hauled onto a flatbed. Ranger was finishing up police paperwork. He looked over at Morelli and gave him a nod of acknowledgement. Morelli stood very close to me.
Do you want to tell me about this?
He asked. Off the record?
Off the record.
We had a tip that Evelyn was at Newark Airport. We drove to Newark and caught her before she boarded. After hearing her story, I decided she needed to get on the plane, so I let her go. I had no reason to detain her anyway. I just wanted to know what this was about. When we got back, Abruzzi's men were waiting. There were some words, and they torched the truck.
I need to talk to Ranger,
Morelli said.
You're not going anywhere, are you?
If I could borrow your truck, I'd get a pizza. I'm starved. Morelli gave me his keys and a 20.
Get two. I'll call it into Pino's for you.
I pulled out of the lot and headed for the burg. I turned at the hospital and I checked my rearview mirror. I was being careful now. I was trying not to let my fear surface, but it was boiling inside me. I kept telling myself it was only a matter of time before the police got something on Abruzzi. He was too flagrant. He was too wrapped up in his own craziness playing the game. There were too many people involved. He'd killed the bear and Soder to keep them quiet, but there were others. He couldn't kill everyone. I didn't see anyone turn with me, but that was no guarantee. If more than one car is used, it's sometimes hard to spot a tail. Just to be safe, I had my gun out when I parked in the lot. I had just a short distance to go. Once I was inside, I'd be okay. There were always a couple cops in Pino's. I swung down from the truck and started for the door to the bar. I took two steps, and a green van appeared from nowhere. It glided to a stop. The window rolled down, and Valerie looked out at me, her mouth duct-taped shut, her eyes wild with fear. There were three other men in the van, including the driver. Two of them wore full rubber masks, Nixon and Clinton again. Plus, there was a guy in a paper bag with two eyes torn out. I guess the budget only covered two rubber masks. The bag held a gun to Valerie's head. I didn't know what to do. I was frozen, mentally and physically paralyzed.
"Drop the gun," the bag said, "and slowly walk to the van, or I swear to God I'll kill your sister."
The gun fell out of my hand. "Let her go."
"After you get in."
I reluctantly moved forward, and Nixon shoved me into the back seat. He duct-taped my mouth and wrapped tape around my hands. The van roared off, out of the burg, across the river into Pennsylvania. After 10 minutes, we were on a dirt road. Houses were small and sporadic, stuck into patches of woods. The van slowed and then stopped on the shoulder. The bag opened the door and shoved Valerie out. I saw her hit the ground and roll off the shoulder into the brush at the side of the road. The bag pulled the door shut, and the van took off. Minutes later, the van turned into a driveway and stopped. We all got out and went into a small clapboard bungalow. It was pleasantly decorated. Not expensive stuff, but comfortable and clean. I was directed to a kitchen chair and told to sit. A short while after I took my place, a second car crunched on the dirt and gravel outside. The bungalow door opened, and Abruzzi walked in. He was the only man not in a mask. He took a chair opposite me. We were close enough that our knees touched, and I could feel the heat from his body. He reached out and ripped the tape from my mouth.
"Where is she?" he asked me. "Where is Evelyn?"
"I don't know." He hit me with an open-handed slap to the face that caught me off guard and knocked me off my chair. I was in shock when I hit the floor, too stunned to cry, too frightened to protest. I tasted blood, and I blinked tears away. The guy in the Clinton mask hauled me up by my armpits and set me back on the chair.
"I'm going to ask you again," Abruzzi said. "I'm going to keep asking you until you tell me. Each time you don't answer, I'm going to give you pain. Do you like pain?"
"I don't know where she is. You give me too much credit. I'm not that good at finding people."
"Ah, but you're friends with Evelyn, aren't you? Her grandmother lives next door to your parents. You've known Evelyn all your life. I think you know where she is. And I think you know why I want to find her."
Abruzzi got up and went to the stove. He turned the gas on, got a poker from the fireplace, and held it into the flame. He tested the poker with a drop of water. The water sizzled and evaporated.
"What first?" Abruzzi said. "Should we poke out an eye? Should we do something sexual?"
If I told Abruzzi Evelyn was in Miami, he'd go down there and find her. Probably he'd kill her and Annie, and probably he'd kill me too, no matter what I said. Evelyn is on her way across the country, I said. She's driving.
That's the wrong answer, Abruzzi said. I know she boarded a plane from Miami. Unfortunately, Miami is a big place. I need to know where she's staying in Miami.
The bag held my hands on the tabletop. The guy in the Nixon mask cut my sleeve away, then held my head, and Abruzzi held the hot poker to my bare arm. Someone screamed. I guess it was me. And then I fainted. When I came around, I was on the floor. My arm felt like fire, and the room smelled like pot roast cooking. The bag dragged me to my feet and set me on the chair again. The most horrifying part to all this was that I honestly didn't know where Evelyn was staying. No matter how much they tortured me, I couldn't tell them. They'd have to torture me until I was dead.
Okay, Abruzzi said. One more time. Where is Evelyn?
There was the sound of a motor revving outside, and Abruzzi paused to listen. The guy in the Nixon mask went to the window, and suddenly lights blazed through the curtains, and the green van crashed through the picture window in the front of the house. There was a lot of dust and confusion. I was on my feet, not sure where to go, when I realized Valerie was driving the van. I wrenched the side door open, threw myself inside, and yelled at her to go! She put the van into reverse, backed out of the house at about 40 miles per hour, and careened out of the driveway. Valerie still had her mouth and hands duct taped together, but it wasn't slowing her down. She barreled down the dirt road, hit the highway, and skidded onto the bridge approach. My fear now was that she'd dump us into the river if she didn't slow down. There were chunks of wallboard stuck to the windshield wipers. The windshield was cracked, and the front of the van was smashed. I ripped the tape off Valerie's mouth, and she let out a howl. Her eyes were still wild, and her nose was running. Her clothes were torn and dirt-smudged. I yelled at her to ease off the gas, and she started to cry.
"Jesus Christ!" she said between sobs. "What the hell kind of a life do you lead? This isn't real. This is fucking television!"
"Wow, Val, you said fuck."
"Damn fucking right! I'm fucking freaked out! I can't believe I found you! I just started walking. I thought I was walking back to Trenton, but I got turned around somehow, and then I saw the van. And I looked in the window and saw them burning you, and they left the keys hanging in the ignition, and I'm gonna throw up!"
She screeched to a stop at the side of the road, opened the door, and heaved. I took over the driving after that. I couldn't take Valerie home in her present condition. My mother would have a plots. I was afraid to go to my apartment. I didn't have a phone, so I couldn't get in touch with Ranger. That left Morelli. I turned into the burg on the way to Morelli's house, and on a long shot, went a block out of my way and drove past Pino's. Morelli's truck was still there, plus Ranger's Mercedes and the black Range Rover. Morelli, Ranger, Tank, and Hector were in the lot. I pulled the van in next to Morelli's truck, and Valerie and I tumbled out. "He's in Pennsylvania," I said, "in a house on a dirt road. He would have killed me, but Valerie drove the van into the house, and somehow we got out."
"It was fucking awful,"
Valerie said, teeth chattering.
"I was so fucking scared."
She looked down at her wrists, still wrapped in duct tape.
"My wrists are taped together,"
she said, as if it was the first she noticed. Hector produced a knife and slit the tape, first on me and then on Valerie.
"How do you want to do this?" Morelli asked Ranger.
"Take Steph and Valerie home," Ranger said.
Ranger looked at me, and our eyes held for a moment. Then Morelli slid an arm around me and eased me up into his truck. Tank boosted Val up next to me. Morelli took us to his house. He made a phone call and some clean clothes appeared. His sister's, I imagine. I was too tired to ask. We cleaned Val up and took her home to my parents. We made a fast stop at the hospital emergency room to have my burn bandaged, and then we went back to Morelli's house. Stick a fork in me, I said to Morelli. I'm done. Morelli closed and locked his front door and turned the lights off.
Maybe you should consider taking a less dangerous job, like human cannonball or crash test dummy.
You were worried about me?
Yeah,
Morelli said, gathering me into him.
I was worried about you.
He held me close and rested his cheek on my head. I haven't got any jammies with me, I said to Morelli. His lips skimmed my ear.
Cupcake, you're not gonna need any.
I woke up in Morelli's bed, with my arm burning like mad and my upper lip swollen. Morelli had me tucked in next to him, and Bob was on the other side of me. The alarm was buzzing on the clock beside the bed. Morelli reached out and knocked the clock off the nightstand.
Gonna be one of those days, he said.
He rolled out of bed, and a half hour later he was dressed and in the kitchen. He was wearing running shoes and jeans and a t-shirt. He stood at the counter while he had coffee and toast.
Costanza called while you were in the bathroom, he said, sipping his coffee,
watching me over the rim of his mug.
One of the patrols found Eddie Abruzzi about an hour ago. He was in his car in the farmer's market parking lot. Looks like he killed himself.
I stared at Morelli blank-faced, not able to believe what I just heard.
He left a note, Morelli said. It said he was depressed over some business deals.
There was a long silence between us. It wasn't a suicide, was it? I phrased it as a question, when it was actually a statement.
I'm a cop, Morelli said. If I thought it was anything other than a suicide, I'd have to look into it.
Ranger killed Abruzzi. I knew it as sure as I was standing there. Morelli knew it, too. Wow, I said softly. Morelli looked at me.
Are you okay?
I nodded yes. He drank the last of his coffee, and he put the mug in the sink. He pulled me in tight against him, and he kissed me. I said, wow, again. More feeling this time. Morelli really knew how to kiss. He took his gun from the kitchen counter and holstered it at his waist.
I'll take the Ducati today and leave you the truck. And when I get off work, we should talk.
Oh boy, more talk. That never gets us anywhere.
Okay, maybe we shouldn't talk. Maybe we should just have sweaty sex.
Finally, a sport I could enjoy.